Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, June 14th, 2008. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host. The world was shaken Thursday when the people of Ireland voted against the Lisbon Treaty of the European Union. This is a major blow against the financial elites of the Anglo-Dutch oligarchy, who intended to use this treaty to take away national sovereignty from the states of Europe and to impose a top-down, free-trade, globalized dictatorship over Europe. The no vote by the Irish people has seriously set back London's drive for a global fascist order, which is plunging the world into a new dark age. On today's program, we will be discussing how the same networks behind this fascist Lisbon Treaty are moving to pull a coup in the Democratic Party in the United States, how a network of corrupt operatives, such as Democratic National Committee Chairman Howard Dean and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, have been working with mega speculator George Soros to destroy the Democratic Party through attacks on the campaign of Hillary Rodham Clinton to hand the Democratic nomination over to Senator Barack Obama, who would be a sure loser in November 2008. In a statement issued last Saturday, just after Hillary Clinton's announcement that she would suspend her campaign, Lyndon LaRouche said that she could still win the presidency. But to do so, we have to drive Soros, a self-professed collaborator of the Nazis in Hungary during World War II, and his flunkies like Dean and Pelosi, out of the Democratic Party. This battle, as you will see, is a continuation of the more than two centuries old fight between Anglo-Dutch liberalism, with its policy of empire based on free trade, against the American system, especially as revived by Franklin Roosevelt, with a commitment to defeating the British Empire globally through fostering a community of principle among sovereign nation states. To update you on this battle so that you can be brought in actively on the side of the American system, we'll be joined today by Michelle Steinberg, a frequent contributor to The LaRouche Show and the counterintelligence director of the Executive Intelligence Review magazine. We also hope to have two members of the LaRouche Youth Movement, one Hector Rivas from the LaRouche Youth Movement, LaRouche PAC War Room, and later in the program, we'll hear from Texas Democratic Party leader and LaRouche Youth Movement member Keisha Rogers, who was just with me at the Texas Democratic Convention last weekend, where we saw the dirty work of Soros in a prominent display. So, Michelle, welcome to the program.
Hello, Harley. Great to be here in these historic times.
Well, these are indeed historic moments, starting with the vote 2 days ago and the ongoing battle in the Democratic Party. But I think, as Lynn always emphasizes, that people have to see these battles in an historic perspective. And I'd like you to just give us a sense of why we say that to understand this battle today, you have to go back to the period from 1763 to 1789, and the founding of our republic, to really understand what's at stake.
Well, Harley, we are at war. And I don't mean the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan. Those are manifestations of a war that the republic that was founded in with the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Republic of the Commitment to General Welfare of Humanity, the Republic of Inalienable Rights, is threatened right now with being put out of existence by the resurgent British Empire. And unless the American people recognize this, we're going to have another election stolen from us, if indeed the financier oligarchs allow the election to take place. We're in the grips of the greatest financial collapse in the history of the United States, and that is the battle we're in now. The British Empire never ceased being a enemy of the United States. And they're out to sink us right now. And what happened in the corruption of the Democratic primary through the influence of a British agent, a British asset, George Soros, is the destruction of our free election system. Now, one of the ways for people to understand the British Empire is to look at Ireland. Yesterday, the Irish people, dominated by a mobilization of the lower 80%, the same lower 80% that gave Hillary Clinton those overwhelming victories in West Virginia, in Pennsylvania, in Kentucky, in Puerto Rico, and in South Dakota, which was a big surprise, absolutely trouncing Barack Obama, because she was speaking to the needs of the population of the United States of America as a producer class to say, we will rebuild this country, and she was winning. But the media was against her, the pundits were against her, the leadership of the so-called leadership of the Democratic Party were against her, because they're all bought off by George Soros, the man who wants to legalize murder in the form of assisted suicide, the man who wants to legalize dope as another British opium war against the world, and the man who uses his billions to bring down nations through currency manipulation using, they call it the Yacht Britannia. It's not the Yacht Britannia. It is the battleship Britannia, the Queen of England's personal yacht that Soros has used to launch war against the Italian currency and the currency war that he launched against Malaysia in 1997. George Soros is a killer. He's a hired killer of the British Empire, and he is deployed against us. So we're going to discuss that war today in detail.
And he is a self-professed Nazi, as we will also be, or Nazi collaborator, as we will also be discussing on the program. Now, just one thing, you made an interesting point, which Lyndon LaRouche also emphasized this morning, that the vote in Ireland followed the same kind of lines as the vote for Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primaries. Now, it's Hillary Clinton got 56% of the votes cast in the primaries after March 4th. And that's why we say that this is a coup to deny her the nomination. But it's interesting because in Ireland it was the urban working class, it was women, and it was the rural voters who voted down the treaty. Now, two issues were quite interesting in that. One is the power that would be given to the European Union to declare war, which in a sense would make the European Union a colonial or an enforcer of British colonial policy. And secondly, opposition to free trade, which is being extended to all the countries in the European Union and would mean cheap laborers brought into Ireland to lower the living standards there. So those were two of the issues that were cited as why people voted to get rid of the treaty. Now, similarly, we're seeing the same kind of response as Hillary Clinton has gone with a kind of Franklin Roosevelt campaign. Now, just to get into the Soros question, what is it that Soros is trying to stop by going after the campaign of Senator Clinton?
Well, he's trying to stop the American system, but I'd like to jump right into the Nazi issue because we have Hector Rivas on the line, and speak about infrastructure breakdowns. We may lose power here in phone power here any minute now in Northern Virginia, so if Hector is on to tell us about George Soros, and this
Hector,
is no
there?
Exaggeration, his Nazi background. Go ahead, Hector.
Hector, you there?
I don't.
Hello, Hector?
I do not hear him.
Hello?
Yeah, Hector?
Okay, sorry, just power problems. No, he's very explicit about this. He mentioned it once in 1993 in an interview with WNET 13 TV, and he again mentioned it in an interview on 60 Minutes, CBS's 60 Minutes, in an interview with Steve Croft, where he explicitly attributes. It's not even just the funny thing is that he was asked explicitly on how he had the stomach to conduct currency warfare which destroyed and threatened the sovereignty of countries. And he contributes his ability to do this to his through his involvement when he was a 14-year-old boy in Hungary and he assisted. He was adopted by one of the agricultural ministers there, which was under Nazi occupation. It was actually headed by Adolf Hitler's favorite, General Kurt Becher. And what they did is the people that he that George Soros assisted, which he admitted to in 1993, in his own words, is they went around picking out the gold fillings of the teeth from dead Jews. They gathered the fat of dead Jewish people to convert it into soap. Yeah, and another thing that they were involved in, this very institution, this Nazi institution, is they actually developed effective ways, the most effective ways to torture Jewish folks who were about to meet their death so they can reveal where they actually had their possessions, where they were hiding their valuables. And George Soros, as a 14-year-old boy, was actually involved in this. He says this. Now, whether he stuck his hand in, you know, in some guy's mouth taking out his gold, maybe we don't know. What we know is he was in the very room as it happened. And he says it's thanks to that, as he says it twice in these two interviews, thanks to that, I am able to become the speculator. I am the speculator that I am today. I have no sense of morality. I don't do things, you know, as he says, quotes, he doesn't do things to help countries nor to harm them, but he does it to make money.
Hey, Hector,
the real issue here, which he didn't say, is he does it to please London.
Hector, one of the interesting quotes from him in that interview is he was asked if he feels any remorse or any guilt about what he did. And do you have the interview there?
I actually do have the interview with me.
Okay, well, what he said I thought was most interesting. He said, if I wouldn't have been there to do it, someone else would have done it.
Yeah.
That was his justification.
Yeah. I mean, what he says is, because it's really funny, because I mean, I can just read this so that people can really see what this is. He's asked explicitly by Croft, first off, and he's showing these pictures as these people are being dragged off into the trains to die. And he just says, you know, you watch these people get shipped out to the death camps. And his reply was, yes, I was a 14-year-old boy, and I would say that that's when my character was made. And he said, and Croft says, in what way? And Soros says that one should think ahead. One should understand and anticipate events. And when one is threatened, it was a tremendous threat of evil. And I mean, it was a very, very personal experience of evil. And then Croft went out to ask him further that, went out, in fact, you were a part and helped in the confiscation of properties from the Jews. And Soros replied by saying, yes, that's right, yes. Croft then says, I mean, that sounds like an experience that would send lots of people to the psychiatric crowds for many, many years. Was it difficult? Soros says, not at all. Not at all. Maybe as a child you don't see the connection, but it created no problem at all. Croft says, no feeling of guilt? Soros says, no. And Croft again says, my God, for example, that I'm Jewish and here I am watching these people go. I could just as easily be there. I should be there. None of that. And Soros' reply at the end was, well, of course I could be on the other side, or I could be the one from whom the thing is being taken away. But there was no sense that I shouldn't be there, because that was, well, actually in a funny way, it's just like in markets. That if I weren't there, of course, I wasn't doing it, but somebody else would. Somebody else would be taking it away anyhow. And it was whether I was there or not. I was only a spectator. The property was being taken away. So I had no role in taking away that property, so I had no sense of guilt.
Now, those quotes are up on the LaRouche Pack website. So you can go to LaRouchePack.com and print copies of the quotes of George Soros. Now, we're talking about Soros because of his role in the Democratic Party, and we'll fill in the history in between them. But, Michelle, why don't you just give people a sense of what Soros has been doing in the Democratic Party today, which is why we're making this an issue.
Soros is an enemy of the policies of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Remember, at the time of the Bear Stearns bailout, LaRouche Pack and Lyndon LaRouche made the point that what was done by the Federal Reserve was totally illegal. Franklin Roosevelt had come down hard on the question of speculation. He had come down hard on the bankers. he was one of the reasons that a whole bunch of laws were created to create transparency and protection against speculation. And people like George Soros hate that kind of role of the government. Look, Nazism, H.G. Wells's open conspiracy, fascism, the Synarchist Union, which believed in the brotherhood of financiers and bankers. These all were outgrowths of the modernist British Empire in the 1890s, 1900s, 1910s, 1920s, which gave us the greatest threat to humanity, which was the fascist synarchist operation to destroy nation states that are dedicated to the general welfare of the people. So that's what Soros is a point man against. And the very nature of a hedge fund, which was created offshore in British Crown colonies to this day, George Soros, multi-billionaire, who profiteered at the off of the Iraq war at the same time funding the anti-war movement, profiteered off of Halliburton.
Yeah, let's take a look at that, because this is where there's a profound irony that most of the people who are taking Soros's money with Move On and these other so-called democracy groups may or may not be aware of, but it shows the utter hypocrisy of this. Michelle or Hector, either of you, maybe Michelle, you know this best. Soros is one of the moving figures behind MoveOn.org. What can you tell us about that?
Okay. Look, MoveOn.org, now MoveOn.com, MoveOn PAC, etc. They are part of a family of organizations called the 527s. That's an IRS code. It happens to be a loophole that allows organizations to come into being and to be engaged in issue politics, not electing directly or funding candidates, but raising issues like opposition to torture. Everybody knows that that's against Bush and Cheney and so forth, or opposition to imperial wars. And unfortunately, John McCain jumped right in bed with the very policies that he sometimes, as a senator, has criticized from the crazy Cheney administration. So if you represent certain types of issues, you can billionaires can pour as much money into these non-party organizations called the 527s as possible. And so this went in two phases. Look, people don't know a couple of things. George Soros is a major financier of John McCain. How do you like those apples? George Soros, the man who financed the Democratic National Committee, Howard Dean, Barack Obama's political career, putting him in the U.S. Senate, is a major financier of John McCain and John McCain's thing called the Reform Institute, which was supposedly in charge of campaign reform. So back in 2001, right after George Bush's inauguration, when Bush never even was elected president but was appointed president by the Supreme Court, Soros put the nails in the coffin of the Democratic Party by financing a campaign reform bill which put a cap on what they call soft money. Now, soft money went to the Democratic National Committee, the Republican National Committee, and the party to finance as many candidates as they wanted. And, you know, if somebody was filthy rich, they could donate $500,000 to the party. Well, the McCain-Feingold bill, which was passed with Soros's $18 million, put an end to that in 2001. Hence, the 527 private organizations were able to move in. And they don't have a constituency. Harley, they don't represent the blue-collar workers, the families of immigrants, like all of our, the three of us on this line now all come from families that came to the United States from somewhere else at a certain point in our backgrounds, because they wanted to live in a republic where each generation had a chance to do a little bit better education-wise, etc. So George Soros looks at the American Republic as a big milk cow to loot and slaughter. And so the 527s, which have no constituency in terms of labor unions or Democratic Party clubs that fought to put in the sewer systems or build a hospital in the cities of this country type of thing, 527s are just there with big bucks to call the shots and control the media. And they took over the Democratic Party pretty much in 2003 to 2004. They go by names like Move On, America Coming Together, ACT, which, by the way, was then fined hundreds of thousands of dollars for illegal operations in the campaign, stepping over the line, and they had to go out of business. Then Soros built up another guy who has used the Democratic National Committee as a absolute sledgehammer against former Presidents Clinton and Hillary Clinton. That person is Howard Dean. Howard Dean was completely built up by the 527s and Move On apparatus that Soros financed with $30 million in 2004.
And this is the same Howard Dean who presided over the disenfranchisement of the voters, the Democratic voters in the Florida and Michigan Democratic primaries. The same Howard Dean who is telling superdelegates they have to decide to back Obama now. We have also on the website, I really think it's crucial for our listeners to take advantage of the great work that's being done by this team that Hector's working on right now to get this material out there for you. Go to LaRouchePack.com at the end of this program. There's an article from 2003 by a couple of our associates called Who is Renting Howard Dean? And it makes a really interesting point in there that Howard Dean was backing Newt Gingrich's operations against President Clinton in the early 1990s.
Isn't that great?
So this is an operation. Now, Hector, what else are you putting together on this Soros dossier so that people will have it to take out to their political meetings, their Democratic Party clubs, their unions, their churches, so they can mobilize people to understand what we're talking about? What else do we have in this package?
Well, I mean, the main point that we're getting out in this package is for people to read enough about Soros that they'll want to hurl. I mean, what's going to involve is principally the first thing that we're going to put in everybody's plate is his comments on what developed his identity during this hungry Nazi period, which will be followed by going a bit of the history of the explicit speculative, you know, financial warfare that he conducted against Malaysia and his personal involvement in destroying the then European rate exchange system of Europe, which set the stage for Maastricht and inevitably, you know, the Lisbon Treaty today, which, you know, had this huge setback because of the situation in Ireland. But going into that, and then, you know, for Greg, again, going further to the guy's character and his involvement in pushing the legalization of dope, mm-hmm. marijuana, and pushing for the production of coca leaf explicitly in Peru, right? And furthermore, to develop what he is. I mean, because all this stuff, he makes it very easy by just exposing himself. I think one of the most disgusting things that we're going to go into, which isn't very much of a long topic because it needs not say much, it speaks for itself, is the fact that in 1994, Soros gave a speech at the Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center and announced a new foundation which he titled Project on Death in America, which this was the basis of how he promoted euthanasia, assisted so-called suicide. In other words, how to accelerate the death rate in America. That's what it is. It's really exactly what it is. And you can find this. It's very interesting. You can go on his website, www.soros.org/initiatives/PDIA. Go to the search column, type in suicide, and it's all there.
Hmm. Well, and this is another tie to the Nazis, because as the judges at Nuremberg at the end of World War II ruled, the euthanasia policy, that is the what we would call today assisted suicide policy of the Nazis, was the beginning of the death camp policy. Just to make sure our listeners are getting how disgusting this point is we're making about Soros, George Soros himself is at least nominally Jewish. And so when Hector was describing Soros' role in looting the Jewish victims of Hitler, it was a young Jewish man working with the Nazis to steal the what was left over from the Jewish families that were the victims of Nazi genocide. And so we see in his policy of promoting euthanasia today that he still is committed ideologically to this anti-human policy. Now, Michelle, just to I think it's crucial, and we're going to continue to go to just unwind and unravel this whole picture. Either you or Hector could go through Soros's role in the attacks on the Italian currency, which puts him directly as working with the Queen of England in this policy. When we say he's a British agent, this is not something we're saying just as a to throw it out. Can either of you go through that story?
Well, yeah, in June 2nd, 1992, and this is where the plot began, George Soros, well, representatives of George Soros, along with various other Anglo-Dutch financial predators, met on, in the presence of Queen Elizabeth II's yacht. In her presence, met on her personal yacht titled, called the Britannia. And out of that, within not even too long, what they began to do was they set the stage for attacking explicitly the lira, not for the sake of just destroying Italy itself, but destroying the system of sovereignty in Europe in totality, which set up the, which we all know, the Maastricht Treaty came out immediately out of that. I mean, what Soros did is he actually used, you know, $50 million of his own funds. And he, you know, collected the rest in credits and so forth. But the point is he used this, his $50 million as collateral, to speculate against the lira. And effectively what happened, just to give people a sense of this, is within a matter of days, the lira plunged about 30% in its currency, and it forced the Italian government to use up $48 billion of its reserves, of its dollar reserves, to try to defend their currency, which didn't work. I mean, this can be typified by seeing the fact that, you know, the lira dropped from about, 660 lira to one German Deutschmark, which was the currency back then in Germany, to then plummeting towards about 1,200 lira to one Deutschmark, and continued. And so, you know, out of that explicitly, this is where you had the Maastricht Treaty set up, as I already said before, which then, you know, set up the whole one currency, the euro currency, which dominated throughout Western Europe. I don't know if Michelle has anything more to say on that to develop.
Well, actually, Michelle, I'd like you, just because, again, we're throwing a lot of things out at people. This is the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, June 14th, 2008. The LaRouche Show is archived, so that if you want to get your friends to listen to this, you can go to LaRouchePub.com, and on the left-hand side it says The LaRouche Show, and you can get them so they can listen to this, so they can have this information available to them also. But, Michelle, as we're going through all these stories of Soros' treachery, I'd like you again to situate it in what you said at the beginning. How does Soros fit into this war against the United States and the war against the nation state?
Okay, let's start with what Lyndon LaRouche has set out as the task for our political army, the LaRouche movement, the LIM, that is the LaRouche Youth Movement, the LaRouche PAC. In the next 40 days or so, 40 days and 40 nights, so to speak, as we get to the nominating convention of the Democratic Party, what the patriotic forces of the United States have to do is destroy British asset George Soros as a political operative. I think he should be put in jail for his crimes. He's in the middle of the oil speculation at this point right now. He's a war profiteer in the Halliburton company that has defrauded the American government and the American military of billions of dollars fraud. And Cheney's involved in that too. So I think a great thing to have free elections in November is to have George Soros and Dick Cheney in the same jail cell. But because they're both British agents. And so what LaRouche is making sure the American people have to understand is the destruction of Soros is one front in a war against the British Empire. Now, to make it very, very clear again, the British Empire has one intention for the coming days or months. It's their system or our system. Their system, the post-Bretton Woods floating currency exchange rate, has been a failure. We've got famine and starvation breaking out across the world, across the globe. We have a depression, a financial collapse. The system is gone. It doesn't exist. There will be a new system put in place. The question is, will that be universal fascism? That is the policy of the British Empire, or will it be the policies of republicanism with a small r, right? The policies in favor of the human race that Lyndon LaRouche represents, reviving and expanding the policies of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. This is what Hillary Clinton was orienting to, and that's why the Wall Street speculators said she has to be destroyed. So that's our war. So here, on this front, in the United States, the war against the British is taking the form of getting rid of Soros and all of the speculators who want to destroy free elections so that never again will the people of the United States be put before the Wall Street bankers as more important.
Well, I think Keisha get on? We're hoping to get Keisha Rogers from Lim in Texas. I mean, one of the things that Lyndon LaRouche put out a series of statements last week that get at this last point you're making about Soros' role in destroying not just Hillary Clinton, but doing it to destroy the Democratic Party as a vehicle for a Franklin Roosevelt revival. In his statement of June 6th, Lyndon LaRouche wrote, "It's not over yet. For the moment, there are now only two candidates." And he followed this up with an article the next day on Hillary Clinton can still win. One of the things that we saw at the Texas Democratic Convention, and I'll just mention it now, and if Keisha gets on, she can give more of a report on it.
I'm here also.
Okay. Well, what you saw there was that when Hillary said she's suspending her campaign, one would have expected that at that moment, if the people with the Obama campaign really wanted to unite the party, they would have said to the Hillary delegates, okay, we're together now. What can we do together? What kind of things do you need? Instead, their attitude was, you lost, we won, get over it. Now, Keisha, from your view, what was the effect of that reaction to Hillary Clinton by the Obama campaign?
Well, what you just said is absolutely right, because of the fact that there was the idea of talking unity, of bringing this question of unity after Hillary Clinton gave her what people call a concession. You had a situation where unity just became a cold word. It just became talk. But it really wasn't a question. It really wasn't discussed from the standpoint of, now how are we going to bring the Clinton delegates into the fold of now working together to discuss real policy, to discuss this question of, the idea of change, as Obama's campaign has been explicitly putting forth, that we're going to bring change or we're going to bring unity. You didn't see this. There was a lot of frustration coming from the Hillary delegates
And the idea of bringing the Hillary delegates into the Obama campaign was very unsuccessful. As a matter of fact, for the first time at the Texas Democratic Convention, you had about 12 to 15,000 people that were present, active as delegates and alternates at the convention. And I would, from what I saw and the experience of the LaRouche Youth Movement, what we were able to engage people in discussions around, the standpoint is that you had a response from people that for the first time in their lives, they were active in a political fight, or they wanted to be active in the Democratic Party, and especially young people. And they got to this convention, and when they were there, they were completely disappointed by the outcome of the convention. Because after Hillary Clinton, who, as everyone knows, has had the majority of the popular support in her presidential primary, in the presidential election, and the Hillary Clinton supporters saw this. The Hillary Clinton base, as we had been discussing throughout the show previously, the Hillary Clinton base is that of the lower 80% of the labor farmers. And you had some of these individuals represented at the convention. And what we saw was that there was complete demoralization from the standpoint that as you had this talk of unity taking place, that there was no real effort to unify the party.
So it actually left people demoralized and the party more split.
Absolutely. And I mean, from experience, I can say, because 2 years ago, in my campaign for running for the state party chairmanship, the objective to bring into the discussion, into the fold of the platform of the party nationally, was around the idea that you have to discuss policies of economic development, of how we're going to deal with the fact that millions of people are losing their homes, that you have a that's looming throughout the world, and especially in the state of right now, farmers are suffering. And
Keisha, we're having trouble with your. Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah, hold on a second, please.
Okay, we're having some trouble hearing that. Michelle, do you have some comments on this question of how Soros is wrecking the party as a deliberate operation?
Sure. I want to go into another aspect because Soros is not working alone. Back in 2006, right after, early 2006, right after the failure of the 2004 campaign to do what we wanted in gaining Democratic majority in the House of Representatives and also the presidency. Soros and company got together and they said, oh, well, we're going to do what Karl Rove and the Republicans do, like Tom DeLay and so forth, and we're going to create a mega fund and brought together a number of billionaires and millionaires and created what they call the Democracy Alliance. And even more than just Soros himself, this Democracy Alliance perch was able to put together, they're very secretive about how much money and who exactly is on their preferred list. So by the time they file the public papers with foundations and the IRS, you know, the political campaigns have already been run. But this Democracy Alliance got together a list of organizations that they would fund. So they actually determine who gets the largesse to run their political operations. So they can control policy in that way, and then people line up, the think tankers, the little hacks that serve in lower and mid-level administration jobs and so forth. They line up and say, oh, please, please, Mr. Soros or Mr. Michael Steinhardt or Mr. Bloomberg, please, please, please let us work for you because you're the ones with the money, and then we'll control the candidates. Now, and the list of organization includes Move On. It includes this very nasty piece of work called the Service Employees International Union. The SEIU used to be a fine union, but then in walked Andy Stern, who is a real British Fabian traitor, turning the SEIU into a guarantee to fascists like Schwarzenegger that the union movement that will roll over and play dead and not fight for things like full-time jobs, health care, pensions, etc. So it's an economic wrecking operation. Okay, so this Democratic Alliance operation can determine who runs for Congress, who gets the money, and who doesn't get the money. But I want to give a very concrete example of how they can turn the control on and off. And this has to do with Soros' own profiteering off of the war. Okay, now, Soros had built up MoveOn.org, Center for American Progress, etc., to jump in on the coattails of what LaRouche PAC had done with Children of Satan. And organizations like Move On would start to mobilize around things like the impeachment of Cheney, the prosecution of Halliburton for their war crimes. Halliburton was bankrupt when the war started, and, of course, they became super, super, super rich. Okay, back in late 2005... Soros began buying Halliburton stock. This was after he became the world's biggest opponent or financier of the opponents of Bush's war.
And Michelle, this is when
he started buying Halliburton stock. Go ahead.
This is when everyone knew that Halliburton was profiting directly and actually stealing from the war.
All right. This was when the Pentagon actually had to refer Halliburton to the Justice Department for investigation. That's when Soros said, oh, great, this is my kind of company. So he began purchasing Halliburton stock. And because of all of the attacks from the war opponents, including us, Halliburton started to get in trouble. Their stock went from about $40 a share, and it was starting to trade. It collapsed to like $26 a share. So Soros bought low, and his purchase prices were between $27.62 in early 2006 up to $33. And ultimately, I'm not talking about a few thousand shares. Soros, as of December 31st, 06, owned 1,999,450 shares of Halliburton stock, which made Halliburton his hedge fund, the Quantum Fund's biggest investment of 2006. Now, look, he can buy whatever he wants. He says it, like Hector was saying. I don't have a conscience. The market is amoral. I can buy whatever I want. If I see an opening, I'm going to go for it. Yes, I'm against the war, but I got to make money. But what happened was the Center for American Progress, Move On, went silent on the issue of Halliburton. No more calls for Halliburton to be prosecuted or shut down or that was it. So that's a very concrete example of the kind of control. You know, you buck me and the money will get cut off. And so meanwhile, here's a nice example. What happened is the stock, after the attack stopped, the pressure on the Congress to go after Halliburton, to get them prosecuted, et cetera, when that stopped, the stock went up again, and George Soros is $40 million richer through that little control. He's a puppet master. He himself is a puppet, but he likes to be a puppet master of the people lower down on the food chain.
Now, Michelle, one other thing on this Soros question, and this goes back to the Democratic Party, and maybe Hector has some information on this. as part of the Howard Dean operation to freeze out Hillary Clinton, to force her to step back from her campaign, they were putting pressure on superdelegates and were telling superdelegates that, many of whom were Congress members, that if they didn't come out for Obama, they would not get funded in their upcoming campaigns. Can you confirm this, Michelle? Do you know if this was going on?
I will just tell you that it is very widely reported. I don't have a congresswoman or congressman who has come to us and said, look, I got a threat yesterday. We don't have that. But what you said, Harley, is widely reported that they will just get taken off the list of the Democracy Alliance and their projects if they don't go along. You know, the one person who you've got examples of people who switch sides. And, you know, some of them are very, very good people. Former Senator and former presidential candidate George McGovern, a man who has shown a lot of courage. And he switched his endorsement to Barack Obama because he said, I have to do it for the unity of the party because we can't let those Republican warmongers win again.
So it was enormous pressure.
Enormous pressure.
That the idea is, though, that these superdelegates could change their support back away from Obama to Hillary at the convention.
Oh, yeah. I mean, superdelegates, all it is a press release. And we know how many contradictory press releases politicians can put out in a month, never mind in 3 months. The issue really is, what are the people going to do? And I want to mention that there's a lot of grassroots emotion out there. Millions of people. Remember, Hillary got the greatest number of primary votes for a candidate in the history of the United States.
It was over 18 million.
Yeah, so there's something out there called the Movement of 18 Million who are demanding that Hillary Clinton go all the way to the convention and seek the nomination.
Well, now, let me get back to Hector, assuming the thunderstorm hasn't knocked you out, Hector. You still there?
I'm still here.
Okay. Now, we're going to be producing this dossier. Besides putting it up on the LaRouche PAC website, will this come out in the EIR, the Executive Intelligence Review?
It won't come out in this week's, mainly because it's still being worked on even as we speak. And because of the electrical problems, it's probably going to slow us down dramatically. But the gist of it is done. The real nasty side of what Soros is completed. It's now just an editorial question, to put it very simply. But, I mean, the first place that people will be able to get it, and they should use it as a real bombshell to destroy this pig, will be immediately up on the website. It should be up by tomorrow. In terms of having it in paper form, it very likely will be in the next EIR, but in the current EIR, I know Jeffrey Steinberg is going to be writing a two-page national lead to declare the launch of this battle to completely take away and destroy this London British asset, George Soros. But the fastest place that anyone will get the dossier will be on the website.
So what people should do is go up to LaRouchePAC.com. Pieces of it are already there.
That's right. You can get the Profiteer Halliburton story right on there. You can get the Steve Croft interview right on there.
And this should get into the hands of people who you know who are delegates, so they can know that what a lot of people recognize is there was something fishy about how the Democratic campaign ended, that Hillary Clinton was winning primary after primary, and yet Obama was increasingly hailed as the winner, despite losing one primary after another in states the Democrats must win. Now, I think that this the convergence of the Irish vote and the Clinton campaign is interesting because people are going to fight for their interests as this economic crash accelerates. And so having the information of who's trying to manipulate you to go against your interests is very important for people to have so they can make competent decisions and then go out and organize. Keisha, did you get back on? I guess we couldn't
get
Keisha.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
So just from what's happened since the convention, I know you've been in discussion with people in the Democratic Party in Texas. Is your sense that there are people who are Hillary delegates that they're going to go to the convention and still fight to see that she gets nominated?
Absolutely. One of the reasons why is because during the convention, I have to say that the effect that we had with the LaRouche Youth Movement and distributing Mr. LaRouche's statement on "For the Moment There Are Only Two Candidates," and prior to that statement, he put out a statement saying that exposing a possible defeat of Obama by John McCain. I mean, you have to remember that the Obama delegation at the Texas Democratic Convention was pretty well established and was overwhelming. In both cases, you had the Clinton delegation and Obama delegation were about neck and neck, around 5,000 people, 5,000 to 6,000 people apiece. But the effects that the statement that Mr. LaRouche put out had on the Obama delegation and the Clinton delegation sent people through the roof, and it really gave people a sense that this fight, especially the Dean Soros dirty operation into the Texas Democratic Party, people got a sense of this, and people had a sense that there has to be a fight waged up until the national convention. And you got a lot of this the continuation for a drive for a fight from the Hillary Clinton delegation.
Now, I'd like to ask either Michelle or Hector if you can give us a sense of the progress on the special DVD that we're producing, that the LaRouche Youth Movement are producing on the 1932 election and the lessons for Denver. Hector or Michelle, do you have any reading on that?
Go ahead, Hector.
It's done.
Whoa, okay. You heard it first on the LaRouche Show.
Well, here we just have a flash for you, listeners. Go ahead, Hector, tell us.
Well, here's the full story. See, the thing is that everything that was to be in it is completed. Now it is just a matter of cutting out the fat, to put it very simply. But it's, I guess you could say that it's, we want it out within the next week or so, and that's the idea. But in terms of all the material that we had put together, it's all done. It's it ended up being about 3 hours, but it's done, so you can understand why we're saying we have to cut some fat out. But it just has to really zero in on the essentials of what Lynn's been talking about, meaning that there's a unique parallel to the situation today in terms of the British Empire intervening in our election to take the entire, make sure that there's no Franklin Roosevelt reflex, where in the 1932 situation, they were doing the same thing, except that Roosevelt was, what they were stopping there was a reemergence of the American system. So through, you know, people like Raskob, you can call today Howard Dean Raskob, the British organized a vicious operation against Franklin Roosevelt for what he represented in terms of reviving the American system, to do everything in their power to make sure they elect anybody into the presidential, into the White House in 1933, as so long as it were not Franklin Roosevelt. And this obviously exists in the context of a history of that one great war which the British began through the ouster of Bismarck in the 1890s. And that's what Franklin Roosevelt came in the middle of, where the British were completely, you know, these guys were urinating in their pants, because out of the Lincoln victory and through the mobilization, international mobilization of Henry Carey, they succeeded in actually spreading the system of the common good, the system of agape, which is embedded in the United States Constitution, throughout the world. Western Europe, practically in its entirety, went along with the American system, most and heavily Germany did, by adopting things like the tariff policy, which effectively enabled them to have a massive industrial capability, which outproduced England at a certain point. Right? Rails were massively developed. You had development of coal, expansion of iron, what have you. And so the British came into the situation, were already in the situation, and were witnessing the threat and the fall of their empire, which is really the empire of Zeus. And so what they did is they had to figure out a way to ensure that they stop this spread, this organ that's been coming, that was coming to life of the American system, where it would completely annihilate this idea of empire from the planet. And it was important, and principally important, that the first step was to launch a series of wars to pit nations against each other and destroy themselves, which is their method. And so it became essential that Bismarck had to be removed as Chancellor of Germany, because he was a significant block in creating a series of alliances throughout Europe, which most importantly involved Russia, that Britain itself sought to actually engage and found it necessary to pit one against the other. Because, you know, Wilhelm II came in that period, which is completely controlled by the British monarchy, most emphatically King Edward VII. But the point was is that he was a necessary block to stop World War I. So they got rid of him. Then you saw various of assassinations, like people like Sadi Carnot, the president of France, the assassination of the United States President McKinley. And at that point, when you had no basis, because Bismarck was removed, no basis in Europe existed to stop any type of confrontation, which is what exactly Bismarck was trying to do throughout the 20-year period after he unified Germany in the 1870s. Now you had the United States, after McKinley was assassinated, yet Teddy Roosevelt come in, who then handed over the sovereignty of the United States to Britain. And that was a dominant feature throughout the rest of the world until Franklin Roosevelt won the nomination and effectively won the candidacy to be president in 1933. And effectively what you saw there, which is the most important story about Roosevelt, which nobody really goes into, which I think is very beautifully displayed in the Elliott Roosevelt book, which is part of this 1932 video, is that what Roosevelt did then was the very thing that the British succeeded in reversing by the ouster of Bismarck and then these various assassinations, including McKinley and Carter Sarnow. Roosevelt revived exactly what came out as an effect of the Abraham Lincoln victory against the British-run Confederacy and the international organizational effort of Henry Carey. Roosevelt went out and fought the real war, which was not just against the Nazis, which was really created by the British. But Roosevelt went out in the face of Britain, through, you know, Churchill explicitly, organizing the international community to re-adopt the American system. So explicitly what he did, and I'll repeat this, is he revived the works that Henry Carey left even after he died in 1878. And so that's and so what you had is that was revived from his, you know, this is very well documented in his trips in Morocco, in Casablanca, in Tehran, and what have you. But the tragedy was the fact that this is very obvious. This is where it's moving. Britain knows this. Churchill knows this. He knows the empire is dead, and there's nothing he can do, and Roosevelt is killing it right in his face. And unfortunately, Franklin Roosevelt died. And so this revival of the Henry Carey tradition of spreading the American system around the world to completely annihilate the idea of empire ended. And what we live in today are the effects of not seeing the full fruits of the labor that Franklin Roosevelt established because of his untimely death.
Well, Hector,
so that story will be out soon.
This is really important and good news for people because as they can see, I'm sure as people were listening to you talk right now, they were thinking back to the beginning of this program when Michelle and I talked about this question of a 200-something-year fight, and that what you just summarized is the puts right on our plate today that the revival of the American system is going to depend on a movement led by the LaRouche Youth Movement around the ideas of LaRouche. And the first task of that movement right now is going to be to defeat George Soros. Michelle, we have a little less than 2 minutes. Do you want to give a quick summary?
Well, just again, the victory, it was Friday the 13th for the British Empire, when the results of the voting no against the Lisbon Treaty in Ireland came out. Almost 53% voted no. The farmers, the blue-collar workers of Dublin and the cities joined together, and they were supported by parliamentarians from Denmark, even the United Kingdom, Germany, and Sweden. So there is a movement in Europe that was triggered by Helga Zepp-LaRouche, who called on humanity of all of those countries to adopt the Republican tradition and fight the British Empire. And that was a victory. That's a victory now we can bring home to the United States and tell the real Democrats, the FDR Democrats, let's go to Denver. Let us win this country once again.
And the FDR Democrats are all those Americans who are suffering the effects of the speculative policies associated with George Soros and his backers in London. So get on our website, LaRouchePact.com, master this principle of the Soros story, and then, as Hector promised, within a week, the new DVD on 1932 will be available. So Michelle, Hector, Keisha, thank you for joining us today and presenting your insights into this. To everyone who's listening, we'll be back next Saturday with the LaRouche Show, 3 p.m. Eastern every week.
Thanks, Harley.
Okay, thank you.